Welcome to the Scaling Intelligence Podcast, a product of Intersect 360 Research and the HPC AI Leadership Organization. I'm your host, Kevin Jackson, and today I am speaking with Anders Jensen, the Executive Director for the European High Performance Computing Joint Undertaking. Anders, thanks so much for speaking with me.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Lovely, lovely. Well, I'd like to dig a little bit more into your work today. Starting kind of general, the Jupiter system marks Europe's desire to move into exascale computing. You know, it was a huge announcement that it's at number 4 for the top 500, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So can you share what sets Jupiter apart from previous machines and what you expect its impact will be on European science and industry?
So, I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, Jupiter is an extremely important machine for Europe, but also for your HPC. We are governed by our regulation that sets high level what we're supposed to be doing with the money we've been provided. And one of the things that was highlighted there is the need for Europe to also have its own exascale capability. And Jupiter is exactly that. We're destined to have two machines at exascale, and Jupiter is the first one installed in Germany. And we are currently in the procurement phase of the second one, which will be installed in France. So Jupiter really is a milestone for us. We've been as your HPC has been growing or coming of age, if we can call it that, over time here, we've of course installed bigger and bigger machines, and we started out with what we call our mid-ranges or petascales. And then we had the three pre-exascales machines, Lumi, Leonardo, and Mirage 5. And Jupiter is the next level. And first of all, I mean, it is to bring exascale to Europe, to give that capability to European scientists. With all the advantages that will give us. Let's face it, at this point in time, exascale is a small club. You have three systems in the US. Not all of them are very easy to get to, especially not for European scientists. So to have our own capability where we can allocate time for European science is extremely important. A number of scientific problems lend themselves to the exascale machine, and therefore this is something we've been waiting for. But I also have to say, with the ever increasing focus on artificial intelligence, Jupiter is just sent from heaven, because while it may not have been in the plan originally, with everything we are now looking to do around AI factories, the architecture of Jupiter is perfect. Given with its Grace Hopper GPUs, it will be a very, very important player in our AI factories ecosystem, simply because it lends itself extremely well to those applications as well as science. So no, I'm really looking forward to having it up and running at full pace.
Great, great. And you actually mentioned two themes that go right into my next question, AI and, you know, technological sovereignty, data sovereignty, technological sovereignty. It's a major theme in European HPC right now, especially, you know, with the explosion of AI. Why is digital autonomy so important for Europe right now? And more specifically, what unique policy steps are being taken to ensure Europe controls its technological future?
No, it is an important question, but I think we need to split it in two. Because you can say there's technical sovereignty, and then there's the ability to do things ourselves. If we look back in European technology history, a lot of good technology has come out of Europe, and a lot of the technologies where we are now looking outside of Europe in order to be able to buy the stuff actually originated out of Europe, science in Europe, and of course ARM is the most prominent example of a technology that was developed in Europe and unfortunately is no longer European. So from my point of view, or from our point of view, there are two aspects to this. There's the aspect that Europe used to have some real gravitas when it came to some of these technologies, and we kind of lost that over time, and we really want to regain it, and we want to regain it for two reasons. First of all, we want to regain it because it is important to have the knowledge and be able to do things ourselves. But that doesn't mean that we will never look outside of Europe for technologies in the future. It just means that we also want to be able to provide technologies, and hopefully we'll get to a situation in which, you know, some technologies that are developed in Europe are also extremely interesting for the outside Europe market. And equally, we will continue to buy some things from the outside, you know. But of course, given the geopolitical situations on occasion, that has also given rise to the, well, what happens if all of a sudden we can't depend on the technologies that we normally just take for granted from countries where we've always been able to depend on being able to get technologies? And so, of course, that raises the other part, which is the importance that Europe actually regains some of these capabilities, not just to also be able to do it, but in case we end up in a situation where we are unable to get the hands on the technologies that we have so far taken a bit for granted.
Absolutely. And that actually leads right into my question about the European Processor Initiative. You know, can you explain the significance behind this initiative, and, you know, how will it work to build a competitive sovereign European HPC supply chain?
EPI, as we call it, the European Processor Initiative, it is the crown jewel, the one of the biggest investments that Europe has done. And I think it is important to recognize that EPI started before EuroHPC was created. There was a number of projects in which Europe was trying again to, or investing to, rebuild its ability to develop processors. And it started out as ARM was still at that time European based. It started out being manufacturing chips based on ARM. And this, of course, we have to recognize developing a microprocessor takes time. But we are seeing the fruits of that, and actually we will have EPI processors in part of the Jupiter delivery down the road. So from that point of view, it does pay off all of this. But what it has also done, the EPI, or the projects that have done research into, or done actually is manufacturing an ARM processor. Well, equally, it has given us the insights into now targeting the RISC-V instruction set. So we have a very significant European investment in what we call the DARE project, in which what we're now setting our sights on is to develop a RISC-V, a set of RISC-V based processors for HPC usage. And again, this is to, on one hand, it's to also be able to have, we believe strongly in the RISC-V ecosystem and the open source idea of that. So on one hand, it's for Europe to play in that sphere, but it's equally in case, for whatever reason, we might not be able to access the technologies that we used to.
Gotcha. And, you know, kind of expanding on this discussion we're having about community and, you know, the collaboration, the HPC AI Leadership Organization, or HALO, which was created by Intersect 360, is a global community aimed at fostering connections among leaders, practitioners, researchers in HPC and AI. From your perspective, what role do communities like this play in specifically strengthening Europe's leadership in innovation in advanced computing? You know, why is collaboration so important for Europe right now?
It's absolutely critical and key, and I don't think it's just for Europe. I think it is for the world at large. We need to, especially the scientific community, is bigger than any individual country or individual continent. And only by continuing to collaborate will we be able to advance science at the pace that we've gotten used to. So definitely, as much as we do have certain programs within EuroHPC where we're targeting Europe specifically, we still want to make sure that the collaboration, the scientific collaboration, is much bigger than just Europe. And initiatives as the AI community there are extremely important, because we basically need to learn from each other, and we need to make sure that everyone that we share as much knowledge as we can in order for everyone to be able to advance.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, again, speaking of collaboration and perhaps also picking up each other's slack, Europe continues to stay at the forefront of energy efficiency and sustainability. I was just at ISC. It seems like one of the few topics that only Europe is talking about. We're watching regions like the US backing out of previous commitments and making large changes. How is EuroHPC approaching the energy impact of supercomputing, and what progress or ambitions can you share on building more efficient HPC infrastructure?
So energy efficiency is absolute key, and it's not just for Europe HPC as such. It's for the European Union as a whole. So we're of course part of that, and so the political agenda is clear for Europe, and will continue to be clear. We put great pride in energy efficiency across the board, and that of course includes our supercomputers. So if we look at it very fundamentally, I mean, what EuroHPC does for the supercomputing is it's a very heavily weighted parameter when we buy our machines. And we're not just talking about the machine itself, but we're also talking about when we go out and we select the data centers that will be hosting your HPC machines. There's very very high attention to the energy story in each of the data centers, in order to make sure that, I mean, we all know that supercomputers, they consume power. So let's make sure that what we get is as much compute for the buck or for the watt of power. So that's what we're very much doing. Now, you're right. I mean, Europe, this is a place where we can also be very proud that our industry is also leading, and where we do have where we Europe may well have an edge. I think that's my personal point of view. I think it comes out of the fact that we've always had to pay relatively high energy prices, and therefore we have to get most out of the energy we're putting in. On top of that, because many of the machines we've had in Europe have historically been smaller than what was available elsewhere in the world, our software developers have also had to make sure that they got as much power out of each of the cycles in the machine. So I think out of necessity, we've gotten relatively good at this compared to other places. But I was very impressed. If we look at Jupiter again, let's not, I mean, we shouldn't take away the fact that NVIDIA has produced a chip that is just incredible from a power efficiency point of view. And that is witnessed by the fact that if we look at the Green 500, the top three systems there were all based on Grace Hopper. But what I was really proud of was to see amongst those three systems, it was still our European-built cooling system for Jupiter that ended up taking number one position. So, you know, at the end of the day, once you put it inside the box, we're all using the same, and again, I think NVIDIA there have produced a fantastic chip from an energy efficiency point of view. But when we put it inside the casing, actually the European built ends up being just this much a bit more efficient, and therefore the fact that the Jupiter system ends up, or the test system for Jupiter ends up being first on the Green 500, is something we can be very proud of.
I would agree, and I actually think that's been something I've been noticing about the Green 500 past few years. I've been seeing more and more powerful computers. You know, Frontier had a higher list. Jupiter, obviously, is taking the championship right now, or whatever. It's such an interesting change. I feel like the top of the Green 500 wasn't so powerful a few years ago. It just seems to be that energy efficiency doesn't have to be sacrificed for power.
I agree with you. It's an interesting change that happened with Lumia and Frontier and that technology, and now with Grace Hopper. It is clear that there's been a bit of a shift.
Absolutely. Well, I'd like to know a little bit more about what EuroHPC is doing right now. Do you have any projects or initiatives in the near future that are exciting to you? Anything you'd like to give more attention to?
I can promise you one thing: we're never bored. So, I mean, if you follow the European press, you may have seen that we are getting our regulation changed again. So we will now take on further work and further domains, and it's especially in the area of quantum what you will see us in the future is taking what was in our previous change. When quantum came to EuroHPC, it was very much about infrastructure. Do for quantum computers what you've done for supercomputers, meaning go out and procure a number of quantum computers for the European scientists. And we've been doing that over the past 2 years. And the six initial machines are slowly but surely coming online now. But what's now in the cards, it still has to be agreed formally, but what is now in the cards is that we will take an even broader role on quantum, which is something I'm very excited about. And then, of course, the other thing that's in there, which everyone, of course, is talking about, but that's what we're already doing just at a larger scale, is the AI gigafactories. Mm-hmm. What we've been busy doing throughout this year is implementing the Commission's ambition in and around AI factories, and the procurements are now starting are now coming to market. But what we will be asked to do is to go to a further scale up. So what is referred to as AI gigafactories. And this is something where at this point in time, the details are still being worked out at the political level. Mm-hmm. So the way things work here is that EuroHPC's job is to implement policy. We do not set policy. So exactly how the gigafactories are going to be shaped is still very much being discussed by member states and the commission. But it was really gratifying to see that there was an initial call. We put out an initial call to basically test the waters on interest, and the interest was phenomenal. We had way more proposals back than I think at least I had imagined. So the interest for Europe to take AI yet up a notch is huge, and there's no question that we're going to be very busy on that, along with gearing up on quantum. And then at the same time, we cannot forget where we come from. So we have the whole supercomputing ecosystem that also needs to be we need to continue to work on. So on the research side there, we're still gonna hopefully come out with a couple of calls in and around application development and so on. So yeah, we there's never a dull moment in our lives.
It sounds like it. Yeah. And I'm sure that we could speak for another 2 hours, but I'm not sure anybody will listen to all that. So, thank you so much for sitting down with me today, Anders. I feel like I learned something. I know our listeners will. And I just really appreciate you taking the time.
It's always a pleasure talking to you.